Life Audio.
Today on Talk About That, John makes an apology video from the high seas and somehow makes it even worse. Meanwhile, I ponder the origin of reality prank shows and tell the story of how two beloved Hollywood stars were almost taken out by makeup. Plus a conversation about fame, talent, and why humans weren't meant to be worshipped. Today's episode is sponsored by Dead by Tuesday, my newest comedy release premiering only on YouTube August 15th. And now a word from our other fine sponsors.
Johnny, another rainy day, another Talk About That. I'm glad to join you in studio and our listeners around the world.
It's gloomy here, but don't you be gloomy, listener.
No.
We're here to bring the whatever.
You know, the listener does not know
right.
that I just tried a different intro and literally had to erase it.
Well, now they know.
Well, now they know how to erase it, but they don't know what I said.
Right. It wasn't that bad.
It wasn't that bad.
That's the thing. You did that one time with your social media. You had social media people working with you, and they posted something, and they attached like some hit song. They just were randomly like choosing a song that would make the algorithm like it, and it had like a word in the title of the song that was very risque. And so here's you talking about something. You're in Buc-ee's or something.
Yeah.
And then the song had some horrible title.
Yeah.
And I go, John, and like I sent you a text, John, what's going on with your text, with your reel there? And then you freaked out, and then you pulled it down, and then you made an apology video. So who knows how many people even saw that video. Then the apology goes out, and you go, I would never, I just want to categorically. You made this huge sweeping statement. I'm sorry my family had to see me this way. And now everybody's wondering, like, what the heck song was it? They're all guessing. They're just...
Yeah.
You send everybody's imaginations going wild.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm here for, Johnny.
Yeah.
I got more traction probably on the apology than
that's what I mean.
Yeah.
And it's usually the opposite. Usually, like, the retraction gets buried.
Right. Johnny, I live a confessional lifestyle.
You really
do. I try to.
Too much, so.
Maybe too much. No, you know, the deal was, I remember that because I was in a Buc-ee's because I was on my way. I believe we were going on a cruise.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the news of that hit me while I was on a cruise ship with bad internet.
Yeah.
And it like...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I did freak out.
Well, yeah, because
like,
you're like...
What are the odds?
We can't get... Right. I can't fix this in time. We're at sea.
Right. And millions of followers right now
yeah.
are questioning their... I don't know. So...
That's a
good thing about having a small following. Like, you can do less damage.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I like it. Well, speaking of confessional, like, I think... That's interesting, too, because this has become, for me, like, we've done a bunch of episodes. By the way, if you want to support the show, talkaboutthatpodcast.com. Over 250 archived episodes.
270. 280.
We love our listeners, but if you want to donate to the show or support the show, we love that, and you can get ad-free content that way. Talkaboutthatpodcast.com. But this podcast is very confessional because now we've been rolling cameras so long, we've been just recording so long, like... It's like we just talk about what we want to talk about. We probably self-edit some where we're like, all right, let's not go down that path.
Sure.
We know. Maybe we'd say something at lunch to each other that we wouldn't say on the podcast. But in general, this is who we are. And in my show, it's way more curated. Like if I do a comedy show, it's more curated. Every word is kind of more measured. And so you kind of get all sides of somebody now with the podcast culture.
Yeah.
But I do think it's interesting because I was talking to another comedian friend of mine yesterday. There's a comedian named Mark Maron who I really like. I like his show. His podcast is called WTF, and I like his show. It's an interview podcast more than his comedy. His comedy is very confessional, and it's very like, this is my therapy talking to you guys out here.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say it's like devoid of punchlines. I hate that thing of like, this is all just stories and whatever. I think he does have jokes, but it's very confessional comedy. And I've noticed with him that when he has a comedian on who is absurdist or has a sillier act, or he doesn't have a lot of prop acts on, but if he has somebody who's just, they just have jokes and you don't know who they are at the end of their hour, they just have really funny jokes for an hour. He's literally viscerally irritated by it.
Interesting.
And he has to call them out on it. Almost like accusing them of not being,
authentic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just like he had Dimitri Martin on one time. And Dimitri Martin is a genius joke writer. And I mean, he's a hero of mine. And he's very absurdist. And, or like if he had Stephen Wright on, same kind of thing, where he'd be like, you know, you hear Stephen Wright's jokes, they're all just little, they're all little mini sections of his story. You know, I went to a hardware store and I bought some paint. It was in the shape of a, I went to a hardware store, I bought some used paint. It was in the shape of a house. Now, that's a funny joke. Marin would be like, I don't know who you are after that joke.
Right.
It should be more confessional.
Interesting.
And so that's become like, I've noticed that in the recently that there are people who want comedy to be very like, I get to see who you are. And then, but to me, I think I didn't really think about that at all. I just thought about, did it make me laugh? Did it not make me laugh? When I was a kid, comics that I liked were all kinds of comics. Uh-huh. If you had asked me, like, who are your favorite comics or why do you like them, I would have just been like, they made me laugh. I'd have been like, I like that I know who they are at the end. Like, it's just, it feels like an added weird thing.
Interesting.
But I do think podcast culture has now added that layer. If you have an absurdist act or if you have a curated show that's very, like, I control every word.
We get to see the real you.
You get to see the real me for an hour. Right. And so people want that side, too. And this is definitely that because I just really kind of, I don't know. I don't feel any pressure to be like, I got to make sure I keep these punchlines coming.
No.
I just, if it gets funny, it's funny. If it's deep, it's deep and whatever.
Yeah. You know, interesting. So, you know, Taylor Swift announced at her show last night that she's about to release in October.
Yeah.
1989.
Her version.
Her version. Taylor's version.
Right.
And Sadie's been following it. So, you know, for the Swifties.
Yeah.
She's not one of these people who's following everything, but the Swifties will post about the Easter eggs that Taylor's leaving.
Mm-hmm.
You've heard all this, right?
I don't know. I'm not in Swiftie culture.
Like little hints
that
will say, and they follow it.
In the songs?
No. Like in her social media stuff.
Oh, I see.
In like,
they'll let you know what?
That will let you know that something's coming.
Yeah.
Or an announcement's coming. Uh-huh. But she won't say an announcement's coming.
Okay.
She'll be posting about something else. And
well, maybe she's just learning that, like, I've noticed that too, because my social media people have told me, if you say, go to my website, or this is coming on YouTube, August 11th, like, it gets flagged.
Interesting.
Especially if it's sending them somewhere else to another room. Like, it's almost like, no, I want you to stay on Facebook. Don't tell me a YouTube clip is dropping.
Right.
Because it'll flag it. So maybe she's just learning that of like teasing it.
I don't know. I think, I mean, there is a movement.
Yeah.
I mean, like they follow, like she came out on stage in a blue dress and they all started screaming on this video.
Oh.
Because she's in a blue dress on 1989 cover.
Okay.
Like you're saying, it's all of these.
So everything, nothing's arbitrary.
Right. Everything.
They don't think.
Well, and in the end, she did announce it and they had a big slide for it. And, you know, so they've been right. So that she knows you guys, those of you who are truly connected to me.
Are there Easter eggs in your outfit today? Like literal Easter
eggs. What if we started leaving?
What if you produced an Easter egg and peeled it and began eating it? Like, John's leaving us subtle clues.
But.
And now the room stinks. Thank you.
That's funny. And what was interesting on the way to school, Sadie, because I think this generation does, she said, I think Taylor Swift is actually a really good person for real, like outside. I think she must be a good, like we have the talk all the time.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of person is she really? You know, and the fans want to.
Right. You want to believe that.
And I think I had that to some extent, like even as a writer, I've actually had to recover from that a little bit. I have this desire to be near people who have influenced me and work with them.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? I want to work near the things that are influential to me because I don't know why. You're drawn to them, but you don't even know all the reasons. So I've had to unpack that some now, like, oh, that's why. And there's nothing wrong necessarily, but it's not there for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
But we were talking, I was like, you know, maybe she is, but odds are, say, like all people, she's more than one thing.
Yeah.
Like, and that's the thing. I said, for whatever reason, I said, I think I know the reason, and she never asked. Because that's what I do, Johnny. I don't just throw it all out there.
Mm-mm.
I just leave it like an Easter egg. I was like, I think I know the reason, but we really want someone who's going to be a perfect person. We want to find them. I didn't use the word pedestal. We want to find, like, it's ingrained.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing a politics. We want to find someone who has no fault.
Yeah, we want to believe it's possible that someone could reach that ideal.
Right. Which is, even in democracy, you in general, the idea of Republican democracy is that you are electing an official who is smarter, more well-spoken, mm-hmm. has greater understanding, more trustworthy than you, mm-hmm. so that they will represent you and protect you, right. even from yourself.
For
you
the highest ideal.
Right. So, I mean, I know where it comes from in that extent, to that extent, but it's just interesting that, yes, that she's like, she can't get away from the fact that she wants to know mm-hmm. who the real Taylor Swift is. And guys, I have her right here on speed dial. Taylor?
Wouldn't that be great?
What have you done if she started talking right then?
Oh, man, wouldn't that be something? I think our ratings would...
It would have gone... It would have been a,
it would have helped.
It probably would have been a little higher rated episode. But you know, what we do here is cool, Johnny, even if we don't have Taylor Swift on.
We could tease it in our notes just...
Oh, yeah.
To get the... And then people are like, that was a total...
Taylor Swift interview, question mark.
Will Taylor Swift appear on the show? And the answer is no, but you put that question out there.
Did Taylor Swift show up for the interview? Well, you don't have to answer that.
No.
Come listen and find out. Also, you should listen to a word from a few of our sponsors.
Okay.
I don't know. We don't do a lot of guests, but I would allow that guest.
Yeah. Taylor wants to come on.
What would we talk about?
You would geek out over her music and songwriting.
I do think she's a really, really good songwriter.
Yeah. You're such a Swiftie, Dad.
Well, why would I fight it?
I don't know.
Like, I could be contrarian. I thought about
that. That's true. And at least, like, Sadie's not into some, like, horrifying,
no.
you know, EDM, you know, trance music that you can't, you just go, this is a computer made this and it's awful.
Right.
Because no. That's what's coming is like algorithm produced music and AI produced music. And kids are going to be into it because it's going to be, you know what I'm saying?
Maybe, but I don't know. We can debate that all day. I still think there's a place for
craft. For it. I just wonder if it's like the Matrix when he's eating the, he goes, I know that this is right. just the Matrix telling me I'm eating a steak. But I don't care.
Right.
It's delicious. You know?
I think that I decided I'm trying to be in the experiences with her. And I am mm-hmm. very blessed to have a daughter who wants me in the experiences with her.
Yeah. For now. Till you
well,
blow
I mean,
it.
She's 15.
That's true.
And she's in high school.
Yeah.
You know, and I told her the other day, I was like, you know what? You really influence me and make my life better. I said, because... It doesn't matter where we are. We could be in a gym with all your high school friends and co-players, teammates, some call them.
Co-players. what are the humans calling them? John.
Co-players. I don't know where co-conspirators. I don't know where
I don't know why
that.
You can't get the next book. What is going on? You're so articulate.
It's true. I said, but you never, like, she will walk up. I don't have to even initiate.
Yeah.
My daughter will hug me at this stage.
That's great.
And she doesn't listen to the podcast, so I hope I'm not jinxing it. But she will at every stage. I mean, church, you know, anywhere. Like, she just comes up and she hugs her dad, you know?
That's good.
And even if we already seen each other that day kind of thing, you know, so.
What if you're her ideal and you're going to let her down?
No.
You don't think so?
Look, I'm no Taylor Swift.
No.
I'm like Taylor Slow.
I've seen you in a blue dress and it's not great.
The name of that album would be 1978.
Yeah, and, it would. 1978.
That wouldn't...
It's like
Sells
a it's
records.
Like a weird burlap flour sack dress, right. Some horrible, or it's like a burnt orange, a lot of burnt orange,
say, yeah.
Harvest gold dress, the '70s.
Oh man,
yeah. Our first apartment that Karina lived in, it's like you knew it was in the '90s, and you knew you were moving into an old apartment when it had the old '70s appliances still, because you know the apartments will like provide appliances, but they're
right.
old. So here in the '90s, we had a. Avocado green stove and fridge. This is over 20-year-old fridge. And you just go like, this is how you know this fridge is going to crap out on us for sure. It's just hanging on. But
wow. I remember them in my old house growing up,
yeah.
those kinds of things. And the linoleum.
Yeah.
That left an impression. The like, and now in the 90s then you had the ducks with the blue.
Mm-hmm.
We had that in my house, the second
country
house.
Blue. Everything was country blue and
country
ducks
blue
and
ducks.
Little hearts. Mauve, a lot of mauve.
Yeah. Ooh.
Ooh. Mauve yeah. and country blue just, and wallpaper, just the border on the top
uh-huh.
where you'd put crown molding now was just a thin wallpaper strip.
Yeah.
I put up a lot of those.
Yeah.
Mom was like, put a border up and that'll that'll set off the whole room. It's like, we don't need to repaint. We'll just put up this border. Now it's like the whole room. And somehow we got out of that. It's coming back. Surely it'll come back, right? These things come in waves.
Bring back the ducks.
Because like it took 100 years, and now shit, and then shiplap became a thing, right?
Right.
You know, Chip and Joanna, and now all these homes that have shiplap. The minute that show was off the air,
yeah.
Like I think Wes Binkley, our friend who's a realtor, he was like, "Well, shiplap is now the beginning. It's like the fading star of shiplap because now it's not on TV every week.
Well, they have their own network now.
So everybody that went and ran and put shiplap into all their rooms, like it's only a matter of time. Again, that's okay. If you like it, you like it. So if you're not looking to sell your house, who cares?
See, I think it is the influence that has caused trends to stay much, much longer.
Oh, you think?
Because, yeah, you're going to do whatever Joanna Gaines tells you to do.
You want to do shiplap.
If she said so.
Your house would look weird with shiplap, though, because it's not a country house.
It's not a country house.
So it'd be weird to be like, put country elements in it.
It's an all-brick home.
You walk in, and now you've got like...
Yeah.
A farm fresh eggs sign.
Yeah.
With like a basket and.
Right.
It just looked like those are fake eggs. I hope they're not being refrigerated.
These are the eggs that Taylor Swift left here.
Yes. And she. Taylor Swift lays eggs, guys. You heard it here. She is.
She's not laying eggs with these albums and this
tour. Oh, hey now.
I heard.
They're hits.
Come on now. I heard. From my wife, I think. Someone did the math. I want to say this tour has grossed... I think it's in the billion.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, with a B.
Yeah.
Johnny, that's $1,000 million.
$1,000 million.
And I know just what we paid, so I really wasn't surprised.
You're a chunk of that.
I think we're like 5% of that.
You're in that number. You're in that number.
But at the same time, like, she could keep going. She's about to do Europe.
Yeah, she's going to do Canada next. And I heard that Toronto or Canada. There's a Canada tour she just announced, and they said it already has like, you know, 100 million people or whatever, just 100 million tickets. I was like, how? There's only 25 million people are going to go to Canada to see her.
I don't get into the whole like Kanye Beyonce war with Taylor Swift stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I do. And this is probably as close to like culture stuff that I would really get into because, again, I have a daughter here, but like, Kanye jumping up on the stage during someone else's awards ceremony was the most messed up thing. Like that was a narcissism,
yeah,
and a mental health issue to me. And I know there's been a lot.
He's
of
He's had many
about
since
that.
Then. Well, yeah, and you stole her moment. It was just it was wrong.
It was gross. Like, hey, you know, someone like you lost, or your friend lost. Like, go on with it, kind of thing.
Even if you wanted to say something like that in the paper the next day, that would have been wrong. But jumping up and ruining her moment was like really wrong.
Yeah. Like, again, whether you like Taylor Swift or don't like Taylor Swift, it's really not about that. Like, that's a...
Yeah, she didn't... It's not like she chose to get, you know...
Was it an MTV
to win it.
Music Award?
Yeah, it was a VMA, yeah.
Or, yeah.
I think.
Video.
Was it a Grammy or was
no,
it...
No, I think it was
a VMA.
I think it was VMA.
It's the VMAs. Yeah, because he said Beyonce had the best video, one of the best videos of all time.
Yep.
With Single Ladies.
Yeah. And it was just like... Yeah. That stuff, that's what I... But she has... The point of me saying that was, like, there is a... I kind of want to have this like, bro, she has now sold more tickets to more concerts. Like,
so you think might makes right?
What the number is, but she won.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like if there was a you knock me down and of course she wrote.
And I get up again, you're never going to keep me
you
down.
You never. Like she's written a lot. And I was meeting with someone this morning. It's a thing that you and I didn't coin, but we say it a lot.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, you know, hey, look. Some people live their lives trying to prove someone right.
Yeah.
And some people live their lives trying to prove someone wrong.
Right.
And either way, I don't think is necessarily the healthiest, you know, way to live. But if she's trying to prove someone wrong, like mission accomplished. I'm not saying right makes might, but if the goal of pop music is for it to be popular, then she's set like all the world, the records for number one hits and downloads and now concerts. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, to your point, though, about like people needing an ideal and it can be unhealthy for that person and for the culture. But we kind of crave that. Like Israel wanted a king because other nations had a king. I think I watched this documentary last night called Untold, and it's about Johnny Manziel. Who's one of the biggest draft busts in the history of the NFL.
Johnny Football.
Johnny Football. unbelievable college player who was all instinct.
Right.
And so then but he can't stay out of trouble. He's boozing and drinking and never looking at the playbook.
It's boozing all, and drinking.
Boozing and drinking and drugging and all the things. I know a lot about drug culture.
I could tell.
And he's smoking alcohol. But anyway, he's getting in trouble constantly, and he's getting arrested, but they keep covering it up. And, like, I think he revealed on the documentary that, like, basically all of his drug tests, like the fourth string quarterback was taking the urine tests for him.
Wow.
So he somehow gets drafted by the Browns, of course, you know, to further implode their...
Somehow. I mean, he was a national championship player.
No. I'm just saying, like, of course they're the team that took a chance. Right. Because there was talk that he might fall to the second round.
Yeah.
And, but anyway, it was just kind of a timeline of his story.
Yeah.
And they're kind of just warts and all bearing his story. And the thing I kept thinking, and I saw Sean Groves, who's a former CCM artist, and now he's a speaker on behalf of Compassion. So I follow him on Twitter, and he said he had watched it, and he goes, "It's so striking to me that we're just not built to be worshipped. Like, it's so poisonous when we worship human beings. It poisons us. It poisons them.
Yep.
It's just not supposed to happen." That's not to say you can't be a fan of somebody. You can't go to their concerts. You can't enjoy their art. But when they become this icon to you, you've hurt them and you've hurt yourself. Like, it's just, we're not wired for that. And it killed this guy. I mean, it didn't kill him yet, but it ruined his life.
Yeah.
He's not ever going to be the same. And it all started with the Johnny Football stuff, all that. Like, when you show them that you might have a talent that not everybody can do, and then you elevate that person and you take accountability away from them,
right,
you've hurt them. We see it with pastors. We see it with athletes. But I was just struck by that too. And I was just like, man, this guy, I almost felt like a sense of, like, you know, just pity on him.
Yeah.
Because you're like, you got this gift. Because he even said, no matter what would have happened, I would never have been able to be a professional quarterback. I don't have the discipline. Like, he admitted it.
Interesting.
He was like, it would not have mattered if I'd stayed in college all 4 years instead of going after 2 years.
Because it's not just physicality and athleticism.
Because when you get to the pros, everybody's good.
Right.
And you have to watch game film. And that was the one thing. Like, he hired an agent, and the agent was just a yes man for the most part at first. And then after a while, he was just like, Johnny, you've got to. He goes, they're telling me you're not watching film. And he goes, and then the guy goes, he's not watching film. And he goes, well, he's got to watch some film. They go, we can track it. His iPad hours are 0.00. He literally did not open the iPad to look at film. And he was a professional. He was getting paid like $8 million, his first contract or something like that. And so he was just, I mean, it's just such a strange thing to get everything that you've worked for, whatever. I guess he didn't really work for it. He just kind of coasted on talent. And then he got to a point where he goes, I'm going to have to put in the work. And he had no desire to do it. He was just living that life. But it was handed to him by people who worshipped him.
Yeah.
In essence. Mm. So they handed him the thing that was going to destroy him.
Interesting.
Because of a gift that he was given by God. It's a weird thing.
Well, there's a truth to the fact that if you get everything that you have ever dreamed of, when you get it, you will still be you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the identity tied to the accomplishment, I mean, it's like this American way. You can be shaped by it, but you're fundamentally... So if you don't fundamentally know who you are,
yeah,
and you're waiting for some future status or event or accomplishment. I mean, I remember those days graduating college, whatever your next, it doesn't have to be some NFL dream, like whatever your next big goal is. It's hit me hard many times on releasing a book that I thought was going to be something,
you know,
that even if it was something and did well, I'm still me.
Mm-hmm.
Like I need to deal with who I am. Do I know my identity? It's such an interesting, we're reading a book called The Beautiful Resistance by John Tyson as a staff right now. And he talks a lot about idols and getting it. And it's a hard word. You know, like I want to put a bunch of asterisks around the word, which I know why I do that, by the way, because I'm a six. So I have to, like, you know, go through all the things to help you not misunderstand anything. I try to hit all the angles. And
qualifying statements.
It makes me over communicate and over qualify a lot. So forgive me. But a word like idol feels like it deserves it sometimes. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it basically it's when you expect something from something that it can't give, that only God can give, then you have elevated it. And it can be good things. I think that he talks about like the sort of default belief system that would say, oh, an idol is bad.
Yeah.
Right? But money in and of itself is not bad. And you can even be seeking after it for good reasons, to provide for your family, you know,
right,
to whatever. But it can still become something that I'm expecting or acquiring from it what it can't give. And that's what God would always say in the Old Testament about literal physical idols they would have. Like, what is this? You made this,
yeah,
with your own hand out of a piece of wood. What do you expect from it? You're mm-hmm. expecting something from a piece of wood,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so, like, God would reason with them on this. It's interesting with volleyball. You know, volleyball is, from a time perspective, consumes a lot of our lives.
Yeah.
It's, we don't care if Seti plays or not. She loves it. And so we've, at every, at end of every season, no matter what, whether it's school ball, club ball, beach, I mean, we play a lot of volleyball. We're like, hey, you don't have to, do you want to do, you want to sign up and try out again for the next thing? And, you know, she's a freshman now, mm-hmm. which, I mean, she's, you know, on varsity and JV, and it's all the stuff, you know, and she's in high school for the first time. And at the end of the day, it's just what we do, whether, when I was that age, I had a job, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is her job. This is where she's learning lessons about teamwork, and where she's learning disappointment, failure, how to respond, mindset. I mean, anything that you go through can be that. School itself can be that. But I realized myself, I become very mercurial.
Yeah.
Because I want her to do well, not just at the game. I want her to do well for her dreams to be accomplished, to be met, or not completely unmet or shattered. I want her to be seen mm-hmm. for who she is, mm-hmm. which also includes her talent. But you start meshing all these things into the sport because we're on the road and we're paying the money and we're yeah. in hotels and we're having this.
Right, you make an investment.
We're having this experience together. Like, this is her childhood will be marked as Laura's childhood was marked by being at the ball field. You know, her brother went on to play college ball. Her dad played college ball. A lot of my childhood was marked by mowing grass, being with the family, having a picnic under a tree while we took a break. You know, but it was hard. It was working, you know, yeah. and then school. It was marked by, you know, trying to accomplish in school and church. I mean, we all have those things that will. So I'm in it with her. And it's not just volleyball, but volleyball is a lot of it. Huh. And I realized the other day it was like this aha, because I'm going through some things in myself to want to keep facing the seasons differently. I can get spun out so quick, like, you know, she gets pulled from a game
uh-huh.
in a way that doesn't make any sense. You know, she's not doing anything, or, you know, or she doesn't get put in a place where we know she could do well, or she's just having a bad day or whatever, or she's having a good day, or the coach yells at the team, has nothing to do with her, but it's like, it makes me feel unsafe that the whole system, like, whatever.
Yeah.
I can get spun out, and I'm a 45-year-old man.
Right.
Am I 45 or 44? I don't remember.
I'm 49. There's no way to, I'm 49, so yeah, you're
44. There's no way to know. But I told Sadie, I was like, hey, for me and you, we have to lean into this truth. Mm-hmm. Volleyball will never provide us stability and security. It can't.
You're right.
We are asking of this sport. When we come in, and if we get spun out by it, then what mm-hmm. we were saying is, well, I thought there was a way that you could make this team, accomplish this, do this, and you would finally be safe. And everyone, you know, you're not going right. to have this next challenge or this next whatever. But it's going to always change. It's just a sport. It's going to have yeah. a different coach every season. You're gonna, like, if we stop requiring from it what it cannot give, mm-hmm. then we can really deal with ourselves.
Yeah.
Think about literally at one of my nephew's baseball games. I mean, the police had to be called the other day.
Oh, boy.
I mean, there was like racial slurs, violence at the ball field, at Little League fields, all over the nation, this stuff is happening.
Yeah.
And you got to stop and ask, and this is not about youth sports, but are we asking from that
mm-hmm.
what it cannot give?
If anyone's a great example of the fact that volleyball can't give you the connection that you want, it's Tom Hanks in Castaway. Don't you think he taught us that?
You have been sitting.
He reached out. He saw Wilson.
Oh, my goodness.
He tried to anthropomorphize it.
Yeah.
This is my friend now.
Yeah.
Wasn't his friend.
It wasn't.
Wasn't real.
Could have been his friend.
Was real to him.
Probably saved his life.
Maybe gave him the will to.
Because he had dialogue, even if it was only within his own mind.
Yeah.
He needed somebody to talk
to. If Sadie starts talking to the.
To the volleyball.
You need to.
Yeah.
Intervene. That'd be okay for you to intervene as a whatever you are, volleyball dad.
All of us with house dogs talk to our dogs and talk for them. Right. People with hunting dogs, probably not as much, you know.
But. Yeah, I wonder if, I don't understand, that's the thing, is like, I would never look down on, but I don't understand people who have dogs that, aren't integral parts of their life. They're like working dogs.
Utility.
Like, I get dogs. Service dogs, but I don't understand people who don't like, doo-doo-boo-ga-goo-goo. I got, that's why you have a dog. You have a dog to snuggle with it boop their snoot.
Well, security. A lot of people put them in the yard so they'll bark at intruders.
They bark at everything.
That's not a dog you want to. Well, then, but the intruder doesn't come in because they're afraid of the dog. Look, Ace is in charge of security within our perimeter.
Oh, and he's good.
And he knows that.
That guy.
He runs a tight ship.
He's terrifying.
He'll bark.
What is he, 11 pounds?
He's 9. But listen, it's not the size of the fight and the dog. Wait.
Yeah.
It is the size.
It's the distance I can punt him if he comes at me.
I often wonder if he really had to engage.
Right. What would it look like?
Would he?
Yeah.
Or would he be like,
I mean, I've seen some chihuahuas that love to tussle.
Listen, chihuahuas.
Chihuahuas have this face that looks like their eyes are trying to escape their head. You know?
Like if you they're just squeeze a little bit, it's going to pop right out. Yeah.
It is. They're very aggressive.
Yeah, my friend had one. Every time I went to his house, quite frankly, it was very irritating because I'm good with dogs.
Yeah.
And I couldn't win that dog over. Mm-mm. Like territorially.
Chihuahuas are one person dogs.
Right. It thought I was trying to hurt the wife.
Yeah.
Just by being there.
Right.
And I was.
Or like they're jealous of the attention that
I kept explaining it to him.
Right.
It seemed like it did nothing.
These chihuahuas, they can't be reasoned with. I don't know. Speaking of reasoning, John.
Yes.
Sometimes it's important, if you're looking for a reasonable affect on your personality, to look at our history, because there's so much to be gleaned.
Yeah, I can take it or leave it.
Really?
Sorry, go ahead.
You were a history, weren't you a history major? Okay. And so that's what we like to do every week. We go back, all the way back. This week in history, it's a segment we like to call Talk About Then. This week, John, 1966, the first U.S. moon satellite, the Lunar Orbiter 1, is launched. 66, it successfully orbited the moon 526 times. Did not realize that. I guess it's because it's spinning? The moon's spinning too? I don't know. It orbited 526 times. I did not know that. Before intentionally striking the moon's surface. I don't know why it did that. It also took the first photograph of the Earth from near the moon. So we have this. It's kind of a grainy. I could show it to you, but it's a little grainy. And some people would say it's faked, I guess. Its primary purpose was to photograph areas of the moon's surface for landing sites for the Surveyor and Apollo missions. So this kind of was the forerunner.
So they sent a satellite to orbit a satellite.
Yeah.
Come on now.
Won't that?
I don't know how.
I don't either.
Okay.
Here's some famous last... You like famous last words?
Oh, yeah. Those are
Love
great.
Famous last words. Yeah. This one's a little dark. We tend to go dark. I don't know why. Sometimes this week in history, but this one's kind of dark, but also kind of fun. It kind of scratches the itch for me as a true crime person. Famous last words. Convicted murderer James French is executed by electric chair for murdering his cellmate. When discussing his pending execution with a reporter, he asked, "How's this for a headline? French fries."
Oh, he said it himself.
He said it.
Wow.
He had killed a motorist who had picked him up while hitchhiking in 1958. Even though he requested the death penalty at his trial, he was given only a life sentence in 1961. French treated his cellmate to a steak sandwich from the prison canteen. Very nice. And then allowed him to go to breakfast. When he returned, French strangled him to death with a towel. He again requested the death penalty, and this time it was granted. I didn't know you could do that, so you...
That's
if at first you don't succeed
I've
at getting the death penalty.
I've never heard someone request the death penalty and then be denied because I guess they're
and
like,
he's
well,
like
look,
I gotta, how many people I got to kill
before you guys do this?
And then he has the funny little witticism. So he never lost his sense of humor, John.
This feels like a sociopath.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he'd have been a cool guy to hang around.
No. I don't think something was wired correctly.
John, this week, 1927, one of our most enduring national monuments is dedicated. Do you want to take a guess? 1927?
That's too late for Mount Rushmore.
It is Mount Rushmore.
It was dedicated then because it was started under Theodore Roosevelt, which
it was completed in 1941.
Interesting.
So 1927, it was dedicated. The work had begun in 1927 by sculptor Gutzon Borglum.
It began in 1927?
It says it was dedicated, so I guess they dedicated the site. So it wasn't done yet. It was done, well, not completed until 1941, which I did not know it took that long. That's really interesting. He died in March of 1941, leaving his son to complete the task. So his son had to kind of carry it on and finish the last part of the work. The sculpture would feature the 60-foot tall heads of, do you want to name the presidents, John? Do you
think
you
can that's Washington, Lincoln.
Yes.
Wait for it. Jefferson.
Those are the two ends. The book ends is who you just named.
Jefferson.
Yes.
And Theodore Roosevelt.
Theodore Roosevelt. Yeah. Because you got the glasses in there. Yeah, these presidents were chosen by Borglum, so he chose them to represent the nation's birth, growth, development, and preservation. So that's what the four, I didn't know that. So it wasn't like, this is the top four. We always think it was like, who's the top four? Who's our Mount Rushmore of X? He kind of chose the nation's aspects that they led the country through.
Birth, what were the three things?
Birth, growth, development, and preservation. So I guess he kind of thought of...
Well, preservation has to be Lincoln.
Birth is Washington. I would think growth would be Abraham Lincoln because we grew past slavery. You think preservation because he saved the Union.
He preserved the liberty.
You're right. He saved the Union. Yeah.
I would guess growth would be Jefferson probably with...
And then development because Roosevelt was...
See, unless you think of Roosevelt, so he was this huge conservationist. There's a reason we have national parks today. Like, and honestly, he probably saved the landscape of America, though...
So he didn't just get over...
Right.
You know, which is going to be subdivisions on every corner.
Yeah.
Interesting. I
mean, well, there were presidents before that. But you should watch the National Parks documentary.
I do need to watch that. Really, you've really told me that many times, and I refuse to do it.
It sounds like the most boring thing ever. It's really not.
Well, no. Ken Burns is always good.
Yeah.
Those are always good. Pete Rose got his 3,631st hit this week, 1981. The hit king, John, Pete Rose. He broke Stan Musial's National League record.
Interesting.
So, and then of course he's gone on to be much scandalized because he was probably gambling on his own team.
Banned from baseball.
I still think he should get in the Hall of Fame, but there should be that. What do you think about that? People who have been whatever, should they be banned from the Hall? Because he did, that was as a manager. So these are his player accomplishments. So I do think it's a little bit different.
Yeah, I agree.
So he was a manager when he gambled, but you should put him in and put a plaque that says he gambled on baseball when he was a manager. Everybody knows now, but...
Well, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah,
what do you think about
that.
Steroids, though?
I guess I thought that he...
No, he didn't gamble as a player. No.
Well, if that's the case, then, yeah, I think his player stats should remain. Mm-hmm. He just shouldn't be able to manage anymore.
What about your gambling problems with baseball?
You know, I don't like gambling.
Do you think it should keep you out? I don't either. You know,
I wish I did more. I could play the lottery more or something.
Do you think it's interesting, like, you kind of butt up against these things as you kind of escape some sort of fundamentalism, and you kind of go like, oh, I guess I'm not... This isn't a problem for me. Like, the first time I ever went to, like, Vegas and I pulled a slot, I thought, have I opened a portal to hell and now I've opened this? You know, I'm going to enjoy this so much. It'll take a... And then you just go, well, this sucks.
Right, I won nothing.
I'm throwing money away.
Yeah.
You know, I sat here for 15 minutes. I lost $5. I'm not doing this.
No,
and then somebody who's right next to you just... And they're just... They got coffee and they're totally zoned out. And you're like, oh, man, I'm glad I'm not... That's not my thing.
Yeah, I have a lot of things, but it's not this one.
Yeah, it's not that. Mine involve gravy, usually.
Yeah, I was going to say,
sort of
we could be at a buffet right now. That's my thing.
That's what you do. You do the gambling to get the buffet. You get them back at the buffet, these casinos. John, the $2 bill was discontinued this week, 1966, because lack of demand.
And you know who was on the $2 bill? Let me guess.
I'm looking at it right now.
I believe it's James Madison.
I think Madison was the...
No, I can see it.
Yeah, you're right. It might be Madison. It doesn't say. Hold on.
That's what we have to know.
Ask your Siri or ask your Google.
Is it James Madison or is it Thomas Jefferson? I think maybe Thomas Jefferson.
Did you know that?
An old Thomas Jefferson.
I think it's Madison. I think it's Madison because Jefferson was already on a bill. He's already on the five, right? Isn't Jefferson on the five?
No, Lincoln's on the five.
Okay. I don't see a lot of money.
Thomas Jefferson.
Okay.
Yeah, he's really old. Just,
he's got the curly, he's got the powdered wig, whoever it is. It's a very, you know.
Ah, sorry. I figured it out, but then
here's the thing, that did you know the $2 bill was then reintroduced in 1976? So I don't know if it doesn't say if they're still in circulation, but they may well be, and people just have to request them or whatever.
I see one every now and again. I think I have a few in a drawer.
So they discontinued, and then 10 years later, they're like, you know what, let's bring them back.
Why not?
What are we hurting?
Yeah. I wonder if whoever discontinued it just didn't like Thomas Jefferson for his politics.
Huh. One time I had a $5 bill, and it had blue writing on it. Mm-hmm. Instead of the red, or some, the $2 bill has red on it, but instead of green or whatever, it had red, blue writing, and it said and it said silver note. It was a $5 silver.
Interesting.
And I was like, "Is this?
Did you keep it?
I didn't.
What are you doing?
I think I looked it up. This was early days of like Jeeves, Bing, internet, and it said it's worth $5, basically. But I think if I'd held on to it now, who knows? That was 25 years ago.
You know, I have a Peyton Manning rookie card up here.
Is that the same thing as what I was saying?
And I've held on to it. You know who gave it to me?
Peyton Manning.
Your brother, Todd.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Todd was big into cards. My brother, man.
Yep. Your brother, Todd, gave me that, so I've kept it. And I looked up the other day. Well, it was like last year, maybe.
Yeah.
And it's not worth a lot.
My brother loved that stuff. You know, he gave us money to do our record projects many times. He bailed me out of many a jam with something he'd made from selling a starting lineup figurine or a ball card or whatever. Yeah.
Amazing guy. That stuff. Amazing guy.
Yeah. All right, John, finally, well, I got a couple more. Candid Camera debuted on ABC, which that was kind of
the beginning of reality television.
That was the first, like, punked, all of that comes from, let's catch these people in their element, let's put a zany situation around them,
see how
roll going. Tape, we'll get them to sign a release. Who knows what the early days of that were? You remember the guy, remember the host, right?
No.
Alan Funt.
Okay, I wasn't going to get
You wouldn't
that.
Have ever gotten it?
No. Yeah.
So Alan Funt was like he was the guy. And it is, that show's kind of a harbinger for what became.
Yeah.
It was the canary in the coal mine of like our obsession with, I think it's an obsession with, am I normal?
Right.
Because we want to know if other people are having the same lives that we are.
Yeah.
And these shows kind of let us in, so it's this voyeurism. And it feels like a safe window to watch them freak out because the guy walked by and fell on the ground. And now how do they react or whatever it is?
Yeah.
I always feel bad for the people.
Right.
So like, they didn't ask for this. You came in, they're just eating and you're ruining their lunch.
Yeah.
And we're all laughing. I don't know.
You ever watch What Would You Do? Like, I think it's on ABC.
Oh yeah. Those are like big, like sociological experiments.
They put these true like social experiments in, you know, a racial situation.
Yeah. Or somebody slaps their wife at the table.
What will you do?
And now you have to like either go over and approach him or not.
And they put like 10 people in the same situation, you know, to see, you know, and then ask each one of them, what was your reasoning? It's a very fascinating thing, but yeah, Candid Camera.
Yeah, it is. I don't know, man. It shows me. I don't know if I'm wired because I just feel bad for the people. These prank shows.
I don't like pranks. Although apparently I look like the guy.
I've heard it more than once. You look like the guy from what is it called? What's the show?
What is it called?
The prank show.
You have the memory among us.
I know. But I don't ever watch it because I don't like those kind of shows.
I don't ever watch it either.
Ones where they're in the microphone and they're telling people to do the things.
Yeah.
And you look like the one guy. The super, super handsome guy.
I do get that. I've had that probably 50 times, so I guess I do. And then some guy stopped me the other day. Who did he say I look like? A golfer. The guy who just won the U.S. Open or something.
Yeah.
He's like, I took a double take. He's an older guy. He's like, I thought in a volleyball tournament. He's like, I thought you were him. Like, I really did for a minute. And I was like,
I mean, you could have.
I'm like, man.
I had fun with that.
I was like, I wish I could hit a ball. Well, you know what I'm saying? But no, I didn't even remember, you know, I don't follow golf enough to play the part.
And I've seen your swing. The jig would have been up the minute.
Well, I'm not sure in the tournament, the gym, he's like, look, you're a professional golfer now. Take this club and swing.
Oh, that's true.
You know what I'm saying?
You were like, in a scenario.
I just could have sat there and.
Yeah. You could have just let it be.
Just shot the breeze. Like, hey, you want to take a picture? You know what I'm saying? I'll sign an autograph. Like, I could have gone really far with it.
Yeah.
Want to make a donation? I know that's. I don't know.
That's weird.
Yeah.
I've got a foundation. Now you suddenly have a charity that you.
There you go.
Okay. So finally, John, born this week, 1897, Jack Haley. Do you know who Jack Haley is?
I do not.
He is famous for playing the Tin Man.
Really?
In The Wizard of Oz. Do you know he's a replacement? Do you know this story, right?
I don't.
You really don't?
Probably not.
This is the lore of the Tin Man. The original Tin Man was Buddy Ebsen,
okay,
who was Jed Clampett. Went on to be Jed Clampett.
Okay.
So they chose Buddy Ebsen. He comes in. He's a trained actor, blah, blah, blah. Well-known actor of the day. They put this silver aluminum oxide makeup on him. He has a visceral reaction. It's rushed to the ER.
Oh, wow.
And had this huge reaction to it. Anaphylactic shock, basically.
Wow.
Because they put real aluminum in that, and he was allergic to the whatever oxide was in the makeup. And so they brought Jack Haley in as a replacement. I'm reading it now. Oh, it says that he suffered an infection, too. So Haley got the role of Tin Man after Buddy Ebsen had an allergic reaction to the silver makeup, had to drop out. Haley also suffered an eye infection from the makeup that required surgery to avoid permanent damage to his eye. What are we doing to these people?
Oh, my goodness.
Just to make a movie.
That's crazy.
Now it would just be whatever.
I would be afraid. What year are we talking here? 20s, right?
Yeah. 19. Yeah. I don't know. It doesn't say when The Wizard of Oz came out, but yeah, it would have been 1920s, I believe.
I mean, they're shooting it in the 20s, probably.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a little afraid to have eye surgery in the 20s or 30s. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm like...
Wizard of Oz was 1939.
Oh, 39?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I was off by a decade.
Yeah.
Okay, well then fine. I'd have eye surgery in 39 all day
long.
Oh,
yeah. That's when it's...
Yeah, that's when they really came along.
Yeah.
At the end of the Depression, they really had moved.
They started
science.
Wiping down the scalpels and stuff.
I mean, I'm always fascinated because that obviously shows a bias of what we feel like about modern tech, but there's a lot of things people were doing in the early 20th century that was pretty amazing. Like,
yeah.
Again, again, Oppenheimer. I mean, people are... We act as if... AI and tech and all the stuff. Now we certainly are doing things they couldn't have conceived of, but they're actually doing things that I couldn't conceive of them doing with the technology they had. So maybe the eye surgeons were amazing. I'm sorry for besmirching the eye surgeon community.
Our Impractical Jokers. That's the name of the show.
Impractical
that you
Jokers.
Look like the guy.
Yeah.
I don't know why I couldn't think of it. It's because I just am not. I'm not trying to act like I'm better than those shows.
Right,
it's just
but
a
you
thing.
Are. Wait.
They're huge. Like, they're so big, they do a stadium tour. Like, they do big basketball arenas and fill them up with fans and do just, like, a stage show.
Interesting.
And do live, like, interactions with the fans. They do a cruise every year.
Wow.
Because our buddy Nate Bargatze, he did their cruise one year, and they just had him on to do an hour of stand-up. They flew him out there to be on their cruise, and it's the whole boat is full of their fans who want to spend the week with the Impractical Joker. Like, they're a huge industry unto themselves.
I wonder if our fans would do a talk about that cruise.
Huh. These are good questions.
I mean,
and I think we know the answer. I think it's a
be interesting. What would we talk? I guess we,
what would we do?
Well, what we do is we talk.
Yeah. We would have, we'd do live shows, we would do interactive games, we would...
But you and I are not big...
We would swim.
You and I are not big gaming people.
We would...
We were youth pastors who, yeah, like, in the old days, we were put in charge of, mm-hmm, all the recreational, mm-hmm, elements, and we would... I think it just got out of my system. I loved it when we did it, and we did great.
Yeah.
But it's like 20 years of doing that, and 15 years of doing that, and you're like, you know what? I don't want to throw a pie in anybody's face anymore. Like, yeah.
I don't want to take last night's dinner leftovers, put them in a baby pool, fill it with some more water, and then have a kid jump in that.
Right. I don't want to put...
That feels wrong to me now.
I don't want to put a Cheerio up your nose and have you hold one side and try to blow it into a target.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I don't want to take a greased pig.
Right. Wait, hold on. Where did you get a greased pig?
Well, they were rubber pigs.
Oh.
I don't want to take the little rubber pigs...
Yeah.
And have them run relays with them. I don't want to have a kid spin on a...
Oh, they had to put it between their knees, didn't they? You couldn't right, really walk fast.
I don't want to put a kid with their head on the butt end of a baseball bat and spin them around so much so they run over and hit the wall or whatever.
The dizzy bat races are more universal than I had thought. Like, I think dizzy bat races were common in a lot of camps, not just Christian camps. Because, yeah, I would see them... I see videos of them on TikTok.
Yeah.
Dizzy bat races. So that is a thing. Because I always thought, did we make all this up?
No.
Are other people doing this?
No, yeah, people are doing it, right?
Some of it's like, oh, that's a game. Then some of the games you're like, is this Guantanamo? What are we doing to these kids? This is like, come on, kids, we call this waterboarding.
It does sound delightful, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If you didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
You know what is delightful, John?
You literally stole my segue. I was doing the same thing.
Speaking of delightful.
I don't know. We've already pitched the website, but go to the website, talkaboutthatpodcast.com. We'd love to hear from you. And we'd love to hear from you. There's a little chat box there at the bottom that we've added. That sends an email directly to John and I, and we love getting your feedback, and it gives us more things to talk about on the show. We want to know what you want to talk about, guys.
Yeah. And at johnnyw.com, J-O-N-N-I-E, you can find access to all of Johnny's material, tour dates, upcoming projects. You can also go to johndriver.com if you want to find out what's happening with me any given day. I'm writing a book right now.
That's pretty exciting.
It's been a minute.
A book with words.
Yeah, it's a book for someone else. It'll be exciting. It's a parenting book, so I can't wait for that to come out.
We'll good stuff.
Yeah. But hey, guys, thanks for all the time you give us every week. We'll see you next week on
Talk About That.
I'm Don Hawkins, inviting you to be encouraged with my weekly podcast, Encouragement for You. To subscribe, go to lifeaudio.com.